forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello and welcome to Works Do. It's February 5th, 2012, and this is episode number 30. I'm Kate Gase Walton. I'm the editor of Works Do, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. Today I'm talking to Amy Gutman, a writer and lawyer who has a long list of accomplishments to her name. She's a journalist whose work has appeared in the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, and Salon. Back in her 20s, she co-founded an enduring nonprofit, the Mississippi Teachers Corps. After graduating from Harvard Law School, she also did a stint in corporate law, penned two suspense novels, and worked as a speechwriter for Elena Kagan, back when Kagan was the dean of Harvard Law School. Amy has recently launched a blog called Plan B Nation, in which she thinks out loud, eloquently, and movingly about what's next, both for her and for all of us seeking to find our place in this brave new world. Here's the interview. I'm talking today to Amy Gutman, who is the voice behind Plan B Nation. And Amy, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, thanks for having me, Kate.
So I'd like to talk about Plan B Nation in just a minute, but first I'd like to get a handle on the wild path that your career thus far has taken. From what I've read, you've been a newspaper reporter in rural Mississippi, you went to Harvard Law School, you practiced corporate law, you've written mystery novels. It's a lot of ground that you've covered, and how did all of that unfold?
I am someone who just does have, for better or worse, really eclectic interests, and it's been a constant challenge throughout my life to find ways to weave things together. I think when I was younger, I was happy to do a lot of different things sort of in a scattershot fashion because sort of so many things interested me. As I've gotten older, it's become more important to me to try to pull together my interests, and that's sort of been the challenge. So really, as different as all those things sound, they all sort of appeal to parts of me. And I think there are some common threads running through them. For example, there is a lot of writing in there, whether it's mystery novels or writing briefs as a lawyer or working as a newspaper reporter. There are also two strands. One is sort of the creative strand, and then there's also sort of the public service. I was the designed and co-founded the Mississippi Teacher Corps in my late 20s. So that's also been a big strand of my life.
So one thing I was curious about as you've made these transitions, did you make them typically from a sort of happy place? Had you been satisfied with what you were doing? Or has there been sort of a real searching quality as you've gone from change to change, saying, nope, you know, this isn't it yet. I haven't found it yet.
That's a really good question. I think probably more the latter, if I'm really honest. And I think there's always, as much as I enjoyed aspects of doing one of the things I was doing, I often really felt this nagging sense that something was missing, whether it was something about the work environment or whether it was the more the creative side. It's been hard for me to pull things together. I also think there's something that I wrote about in a blog post, my yin-yang theory of career change. And I sort of looked back. I've got sort of some decades under my belt at this point and can start sort of seeing patterns. And one of the things that I have done on occasion, I think the most obvious example is going from practicing law at a big Manhattan law firm to writing mystery novels, is from one sort of extreme of really corporate business intensity to sort of the lightest of literary genres. And I think ultimately when I'm feeling more centered, I look back and I think, well, I didn't ever really want to spend my life writing mystery novels. But at that particular point in my life, I really wanted to do something that was as far as possible as I could be from the sort of really day-to-day, intense, analytic, and organizational challenges of working in a law firm, which at times I found satisfying in their own way, but by the time I moved on, I was really yearning for something else.
Right. And so this kind of current focus on finding sort of a more stable path, you know, more of a center, that sounds kind of a newer development. If you were to go back in time, for example, when you decided to go to law school, at the time, did you think like, aha, that's the final answer, I'm going to go and I'm going to practice corporate law? Did it seem like you had cracked it at the time?
Well, at the time that I went to law school, I think if I had predicted, I was more interested in going into some sort of educational policy work. I had just come out of working for the Higher Education Commissioner in Mississippi, which is where I had worked when the Mississippi Teacher Corps began. And going to law school, I think in some ways it was sort of an instrumental goal. It was a way to get back on the East Coast after five years in the South. I'd been in Tennessee for 2 years as a newspaper reporter in Nashville before moving to Mississippi, where I started out as a reporter, covered the state legislature for a small group of papers, and then went to work for the Higher Ed Commissioner. So at that point, it was serving some goals that weren't necessarily about practicing law. And I also went to law school in the era when it was seen as a good thing, a good sort of generalist degree, which mm-hmm. I wouldn't suggest it as now.
Right. So you didn't necessarily have a whole career in practicing corporate law planned out at all when you went to law
no,
school?
No, I did not.
Okay.
In fact, if anything, I would have been surprised that I even went that route.
So I'm a little surprised, honestly. What? How did that happen?
You know, I think, again, I'm something of an experience junkie, and just the possibility of working in an environment like that, it was something that so many of my friends from law school were doing. I think it's one of those examples of who you spend time with often has a lot to do with the decisions you make. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it was interesting enough to me and enough what my friends were doing. And honestly, there was also the financial side of it. It was so easy coming from Harvard Law School to step into a law firm job. And all of us coming out of school were, you know, and I was somewhat older at that point. And then my classmates worked for 7 years before going to law school in journalism and education. So I think there was that issue as well.
Right. So I have this kind of emerging theory that we all have this story that we're kind of always telling ourselves about how our work life is unfolding. And for most of us, it changes considerably over time in reaction to circumstance and also sort of what we've learned. Do you feel like there's a story that you've been telling yourself? And if so, how has it changed?
I think, interestingly, I always wanted to write a book. And so when I got my book contract and I wrote two suspense novels that were published by Little Brown, in a funny way, that was the equivalent of the marriage in a traditional novel, in a Jane Austen novel. That was the end. Mm-hmm. And of my career story, of my narrative.
Meaning that you were sort of off the hook in terms of accomplishment at that point?
Yeah, in a certain way, that was sort of what I had envisioned as the ultimate, you know, and in a way, it's sort of funny. I mean, they were mystery novels. They weren't, you know, literary novels or whatever, but, you know, it's such a personal thing where we are when we feel like this was something I felt like I really needed to do and really was a significant milestone for me. And so I think what was interesting is that having done that, realizing that somehow it wasn't like a cake that was coming out of the oven and my life was sort of done.
Right.
There were still, well, for one thing, I mean, I still had a lot of years, a lot of working years. Mm-hmm. And for another thing, I guess I realized I hadn't really planned for after you get the book published, and particularly that I ended up writing mystery novels. I mean, again, did I want to keep writing mystery novels? I did try to write a third. I really struggled with it. And I think in the end, when I sort of decided not to, you know, keep pushing and trying to come up with something that was going to work for my publisher, I sort of realized, you know, it's such a precarious career. Mm. And even if I was able to keep going with a few more novels, I wasn't committed to it enough that I was willing to have it sort of run my life in that way.
Mm. So, go ahead.
Well, no, just then back to your question, I guess. Yeah, I think I had one narrative that sort of, I would say, in my life ran up to that point. And then since then, and that's been another decade. That's sort of been the more living in some ways, it's been the much more interesting time because it's been the period of my life where I've much more had to be creative.
And so I guess sort of two questions. How would you describe where you are today? And how did Plan B Nation come out of where you are today?
I'm feeling really fulfilled by my writing in ways that I haven't before. And that's been really interesting to me. I've always been a writer. Writing's always been a big part of my work life. But the stuff that I've been writing lately, which is, I guess, really sort of personal essays. I started out, before I started my blog, I wrote some stuff for Huffington Post and then for Salon. And it was really the stuff that I'd written for Salon that led me to start Plan B Nation, or led me to think that it was the time to do that. I had the idea for Plan B Nation had been in the back of my mind for a couple of years. Really, since I left Harvard Law School, I had been working for Elena Kagan as her speechwriter. And then when she left to become first Solicitor General and then ultimately a Supreme Court Justice, my job was essentially no longer existed, and Harvard was going through a lot of financial challenges with the endowment tanking as a result of the recession. So it made sense for me to move on. And I was fine with that. I felt like the sort of job I had done at Harvard Law School for Elena Kagan had been great, but I felt like I had sort of done that. The question was, you know, what next? And I didn't want to really dive into anything. I think that was in part, looking back on my career and thinking that wasn't always the best thing to do because there was this tendency to swing to extremes. Mm. But what that meant was sort of really, you know, sitting with a certain amount of uncertainty as I explored other options. And it was certainly job hunting at the time. But I was also exploring, really looking, I was applying for kinds of jobs that I wouldn't have applied for before. I was particularly looking at sort of counseling related jobs, which I am still exploring to some extent. I actually took a social work class last fall at a local school. So I feel like it's still very much a work in progress, but for me, it's all sort of about bringing things together right now.
Interesting. And one thing that strikes me just about the title of your blog, Plan B Nation, is it seems to suggest that this kind of quest or this need for reinvention is something, you know, part of a broader thing that's happening to some extent across the country. Is that how you see this period of time, or do you see the choices that you're facing and the issues that you're thinking through as being sort of more particular to you?
No, I definitely see it as a huge sea change in America. And I think one of the things that I got really interested in the aftermath of the recession was people's unhappiness and the forms it was taking and why. And I came to think that there were really two strands of suffering, and one came from a sense that we were entitled to have these perfect lives if we'd done everything right. And I think that's a peculiarly American attitude. I think a lot of it came out of the fact that we did live in boom years for so long. And so there was sort of anger and frustration at that. But at the same time, there was also a sense of failure and a sense that I must have done something wrong if my life isn't working out So mm-hmm. in some ways, it's paradoxical, but I think people did feel both of those things at once when they were dealing with layoffs and career derailment and things, you know, just essentially not working out the way they were, quote, supposed to. And I really got interested, and one of the things I'm really trying to do with the blog is looking at how we can creatively deal with the fact that things have changed. I mean, I'm one of the people who does believe that things are, this is a fundamental change. I don't think we're going to go back to the America of the 90s. I think globalism is a real game changer. A friend of mine who counseled students at Harvard Business School had said, when I was talking to him about this a couple years back, very matter-of-factly, well, yes, the American century is over. So I got really interested then in how we can psychologically position ourselves to be more okay with this, to suffer less, and to take advantage of the opportunities that we do have, even if they may be fewer or harder to access than they were in previous years or decades. At the same time, I'm really interested in the larger context. And so I was thinking back, my blog is, I guess it's coming up on 3 months old. It's still really a baby blog, but I was looking back at it and realizing that it could seem a little bit schizophrenic because at times I'm writing about social policy and economic policy. I just wrote a couple of pieces about Apple's workplace issues and the Times expose. But I also wrote about my last piece was about having an organizer come and help me create some order in my home, which is sort of a focus of this month. I do these things on the blog called Life Experiments, which are about seeing when we change one part of our life, how other parts change. So the way that I see these things coming together is I do think we need to change the world. But I also think unless we take care of ourselves, we can't do that.
Well, thank you, Amy. This has been a pleasure. I've been wanting to talk to you ever since I came across Plan B Nation, and it was terrific to have the chance to do that.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. I enjoyed it, too.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Amy Gutman. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to WorkStew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.